This is the RightsCast Network at rightscast.net. Who survives when an internet access brain implant pits spouse against spouse, brother against sister, and governments against their people? This April, it's time to honor the past, embrace the present, and seize the future with R.R. Campbell's Mourning Dove, the second installment in his epic empathy sci-fi saga. For more, visit empathyseries.com. Hours turn into days, turn into weeks, turn into months, and we're still unsure whether we're making meaningful progress with our revisions. At what point is it time to begin working with an editor? Did we even do our self-revisions effectively in the first place? How do we know when we're done? Hey there, I'm author, editor, and RightsCast Network founder R.R. Campbell, and welcome to episode 56 of your listener-supported R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network. This episode's guest, Damien Serbu, will help us answer those questions and more as we explore the self-revisions process from start to finish. For those of you who are unfamiliar, Damien Serbu is an author who, per his bio, lives in the Chicago area with his husband and two dogs, Akasha and Chewbacca. The dogs control his life, tell him what to write, and threaten to eat him in the middle of the night if he disobeys. He has published The Vampire's Angel, The Vampire's Quest, and The Vampire's Protege, as well as Santa's Kinky Elf Simon and Santa is a Vampire with 9-Star Press. Damien obviously has a ton of practice with self-revisions, and I'm sure you'll find my conversation with him to be as elucidating as I did. So, without further ado, let's hop right into my R.R. Campbell RightsCast interview of Damien Serbu. Stay tuned after our chat for updates on future episodes of RightsCast Network programming, and thanks, as always, for listening. Welcome, Damien Serbu, to this episode of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network.
Thanks, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, this will be a really good conversation, I think. It's one that's on a lot of people's minds that, of course, is self-editing. That can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. So why don't we start by getting your view on this? You know, in your view, what does self-editing entail?
Sure. It's, you know, one of the things I think for a lot of writers is it's probably the least sexy part about writing.
Yeah.
And sometimes the most painful part. Because the exciting thing is when you have your new idea and you're putting that story onto a piece of paper, and it's like, there's just a thrill, I think, at least for me in writing that. But at some point, just as important as the germ of the idea and writing it, you have to self-edit. So to me, self-editing is the process of just taking your own work and improving it. And I tell people all the time that one of the weird things about being a writer is that at some point, the writing process almost stops being about you, the writer, and it becomes all about the reader. And that gets lost in the shuffle of writing because you're so much in your own head and in your own world that you can kind of lose the focus on why you're doing it maybe, but like ultimately who's going to absorb the information. So in self-editing, what I think, or at least for me, what self-editing entails is the author pausing and remembering to think like a reader. How is this being perceived to the reader? Am I communicating the message the way I'd like to communicate it? And so self-editing is just getting it ready to take it out to the rest of the world and make sure that it's as sharp as it possibly can be.
Yeah, I really like the way that you phrase that. It sounds an awful lot like when we are drafting and when we're, you know, really doing that initial writing, we're telling ourselves the story. But it sounds like based on your view of this, once we reach that point where we are self-editing, we're no longer just telling ourselves the story, but we're keeping in mind that this is going to need to be a story that is, to an extent, accessible to the readers that we would like to have eyes on it.
Yeah, because, you know, it's like sometimes, and maybe this isn't true for everybody, but I know in my writing, sometimes I have an idea or a storyline and I'll write for a half an hour or an hour or whatever. And I'm just so excited about it. I think, oh, this is so cool. I'm so excited. Like all these thoughts in my head are getting onto a piece of paper. And then at some point I go back to it and you look at it and you realize, wow, this like scene that was going on in my head and was so exciting is kind of flat here. Or what are all these typos doing in the middle of it? Or for me, another problem sometimes is like, I think I'm writing dialogue that makes sense. And then I go back and I read it and I think, well, nobody really talks that way. So it's that like tweaking of it. So the vision that's in your head is actually what people are seeing and not just what you hope they see.
Yeah, it really is about finding that balance between, you know, your vision for the story and staying true to like how detailed do we really want to be as the writers to make sure that we're getting our readers with that exact picture, or how much of it is, well, what can we do to suggest the idea of the story that we want to tell while still giving readers an opportunity to feel that the story is accessible to them without getting overwhelmed perhaps by details or by dialogue that might not sound natural, etc. So I really like how you're pitching it there in terms of, you know, this transition or finding a new balance between who we are writing for, whether it's truly just ourselves or with an actual readership in mind. And that kind of begs the question now, I think, at what point in your experience anyway, do you find yourself finally self-editing? Is this something that, you know, you like to wait until you've got a completed draft in front of you, or do you kind of start doing that self-editing as you write to some extent?
I like to edit as I go along. And one thing with self-editing, well, with writing, self-editing, the entire process, I think it's very personal to each author. So I don't necessarily prescribe to a one-size-fits-all system. But for me, I do it as I go along. So for example, when the novel I'm writing right now, I sat down today and wrote for a little while with it. Then tomorrow, when I go back to it, the first thing I'll do is edit what I wrote today. And that's not a real intense edit. It's kind of a quick skim across, maybe fix minor things. But I think what that edit serves two purposes. It cleans really obvious mistakes up right away. And it also helps me get back into the world that I'm writing about at the time before I start writing new stuff. And then I also, so that's like on a daily basis or whenever I write. And then I also tend to edit a chapter immediately after I finish it. So once I get a whole chapter done, then I'll go back and kind of edit it. And then the final time I'll edit it is once I think I have a draft that's ready to send out to different people to get feedback, I'll actually edit the entire draft one time. And it's amazing, even though that's like at least three times I personally go over my stuff before anybody sees it. You know, each time it's kind of a new experience and I see things that I could, I love what you were talking about, but like, getting rid of some of the over-explaining and realizing you've got to trust your reader a little bit. But also other times I'll read something and think, hey, there's another story here, or there's another piece here I'd like to tell people. So for me, it's a pretty continuous process. It's immediate when I go back to it the very next time, and then at the end of each chapter, and especially after I finish a draft.
And I'm really glad that you're bringing this perspective to our listeners, of course, but to me in particular, because I, for example, am someone who is of the camp where I say, you know what, this draft just has to be done before I'm truly in a position to self-edit. And so I kind of take a differing approach where I will say to myself, you know what, I'm just going to write. We're going to write our way through. I'm also an outliner, and I don't know if you are, for example, and that might play a role in how any individual writer chooses to approach the point at which they start self-editing. But I'd like to write all the way through to the bitter end, and then I go back and maybe I make some notes along the way in the margins about keep an eye out for this or keep an eye out for that when you revisit it. And then I find that I'm able to go back and self-edit, you know, kind of in one fell swoop, so to speak. But that said, at the same time, I also find myself then doing two or three full passes, and it is amazing, like you say, the new things that you discover as you write. Typos that you missed, things that you realized that, or you thought you were explaining very well, or that you maybe over-explained or under-explained, and it turns out it might just be okay. So it really is amazing how we can take these different approaches to really what at the end of the day is the same process, and we can end up in a similar position.
And your process is probably better in terms of giving you some distance from it and not constantly being absorbed in it. Because I do think there's something to putting it away for a while and then going back and self-editing. It's kind of embarrassing, but there are times like I'll go back to something and I'll read it and I'll think, I don't even know what in the hell this means. So you're thinking, well, yeah, I don't know what it means and I wrote it, then we got to clean this up.
With that, let's pause for a moment for a brief word from, well, me. Your book, Our Airwaves, yes, it's true. Anything is possible when you advertise with the RightsCast Network. Hey there, I'm R.R. Campbell, RightsCast Network founder, and I'm here to let you know that you can now advertise your book, podcast, editing services, whatever creative endeavor, you can advertise it here on the RightsCast Network. Not only that, but you can advertise with us for less than a dollar a month, yes. We offer packages for as little as less than a dollar a month. So get your book, your editing services, podcast, what have you, introduced to hundreds of new listeners by advertising with us today at rightscast.net/advertise or email me at rightscast@gmail.com and we can get started. Let's make it happen for you and your creative endeavors. That's your book, Our Airwaves, rightscast.net/advertise. Yeah, definitely. And at the same time, you know, I really do appreciate giving myself that space. But one of the things that I found challenging about giving myself that space, particularly when editing my sci-fi debut, Imminent Dawn, was that because I didn't really give myself the opportunity to go back and read what I'd written the day before, I'd find myself getting lost once in a while and I would lose the plot. And I think that's one of the reasons why, as I was still trying to find the process that worked best for me as a writer, you know, it took me years to really get a good first, a draft done that was publishable for that particular book. So it's kind of all about like the journey overall. You know, we have to converge on what's going to work best for us. And in the same way that, yeah, having that space is helpful to me, maybe to some extent, having the opportunity to go back and do some self-editing kind of like you do shortly after having written it might have been a nice way for me to converge on the process that was going to work better for me a little more quickly. So it's about maybe being a little flexible. Listeners, pick one process, pick the other, do a little of both, whatever works for you.
Yeah, definitely. Whatever works, but also not to ignore it, like to really embrace the self-editing process and to not fear it or to not think you're beating yourself up. Like there's almost, I can't think of anybody who doesn't need editing. And so to give yourself that help is really important.
Yeah, I would certainly agree. You know, even folks who are editors will say, by and large, like, yes, we as the individuals that are sitting here and writing this story down, in some ways we have the best perspective to edit our work, but in many other ways, we need other eyes on this at some point to really help us make this shine so that we can see things that even after we've done our 2, 3, 5 passes at it, like you and I have both said, there are things we miss and there's some things that we will just miss because of our perspective and our take on the story, which is where I think something like beta readers and critique partners can do a really great job in helping us see some of these things. And that kind of gets me wondering now too, what role the beta readers or critique partners play in your editing process?
Yeah, I think they're really important. Just as important as the personal self-editing is to get some feedback from somebody else. And I think sometimes that's the hardest part, or that first time you send something out that's like your baby and you've been nurturing it and you're excited about it and it's kind of personal. And now you're going to give it to somebody. And so as an author, it's really important at that stage to be open to criticism and not feel like somebody's stabbing you in the heart. Because sometimes that's, you know, that's like, oh my gosh, I've like slaved over this and you're like dissing it. So, but it's really important. Those beta readers for me are life saving. And the first round of them are, well, my husband, Paul, he's always the first person that sees something. And then I have a couple of friends. One who is not an author. She just likes to read stuff. And then another author. And those three people are my first round of edits. And what they do for me is to provide that instant feedback from people I trust. So I know I'm in safe hands, but I also know that they're not going to shy away from criticism, that they're going to tell me parts that didn't make sense. I this is another weird thing for a writer. My grammar is not always the best in the world. So I have one of them that's really good at fixing that for me and helping me through that process. They're important to me because I trust them and because they can give me honest feedback. I'm thinking of, like, in one of my most recent novels, The Vampire's Protege, I did something that I hadn't done before. The main protagonist is kind of a villain. Not kind of, he is a villain. And the hardest part was to write somebody who's like Wicked Witch of the West, Darth Vader evil, but also relatable to a reader. So it's just not like this awful person. So how do you do that? And my beta readers were the ones, I think, that nurtured me through some of that process. There were a couple of scenes where they thought, you know, if he did, I get why he did this and he's a villain and all, but I really had a hard time coming back from that one. And so it helped me re-envision those scenes, not necessarily to change my vision or to alter what I wanted to happen there, but to help the reader see it a little differently so that I could balance that. That it was a tough balance between this like bad person and wanting the reader to also like them.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got some really healthy views, though, on how you can incorporate that feedback. Because like you say, it is very daunting to start working with beta readers or critique partners, particularly when we haven't worked with them before. It sounds like the people that you tend to rely on are individuals who are close to you, and they're comfortable enough with you to know that the best thing for your work is to give critical feedback, which you're then able to take and say, hey, this isn't an attack on me as a writer. It's not an attack on what it is that I have written here as a story. It's about finding ways to perhaps reframe it for future readers such that the meaning I intended or what I would hope readers would take away from it would manifest itself just a bit differently to capture the shade of meaning that you had in mind when you were first putting that to the page. And another thing I really appreciate is that it sounds like in your pool of beta readers and critique partners, you have this sort of mix of both writers and folks who are not writers. And is that something that you kind of stumbled your way into, or was that something that you tried to be deliberate about when you were looking for beta readers and CPs?
I totally bumbled into it, but it ended up being a great thing. Yeah, it was just that it was kind of in the writing process and looking for people and knowing different people. It was the individuals who were there and wanting to do it. And actually, I never solicited it specifically. Like, I didn't set up to say, hey, I need you to do it. Well, Paul's different because he just has to do it.
Right.
But with everybody else, it was more we were talking about writing, and I was kind of explaining the process, and they were like, oh, I want to see this. And I'm like, it's not done yet. Well, when it's done, I want to be like the first reviewer. So yeah, I just bumbled into it. And the one I think that I might not have thought of or seen as important as it has been for me is to have the people who aren't writers reading it. It seems obvious in retrospect, but they're so helpful because she in particular, she just reads stuff and she loves to read stuff. So she has an eye for what she likes and what works, and it really helps me out. I think what happens is she's not so worried about the process of writing, or she's not worried about my vision of the story and like protecting that or being sensitive to that. She's just saying, hey, as a reader, this is what I saw and this is my feedback.
And I think that in many ways that feedback, I mean, is just as if not as if it's just as if not more valuable sometimes than what we get from writers, because I think as writers, you know, I say when I'm betaing for somebody, or if I'm a critique partner and I'm, you know, getting a little bit more in the weeds, so to speak, we can find ourselves trying to put ourselves in the position of that writer, which can then kind of cause that shift in what it was that, you know, the writer's intention was, or we might start commenting on things that aren't going to be part of the writer's vision. And it sounds like in this case, your beta reader that is a reader coming at it from a reader's perspective, like you said, she's not concerned about vision or this or that, or thinking about it from a procedural standpoint, or I wonder if they did this thing on purpose to invoke a sense of dramatic irony, etc. It's just very experiential. And by and large, our readers are just going to be having an experiential view of what it is that, you know, we have presented them with. They're not going to be thinking about the mechanics in the same way that writers are. So it's really great that you've got someone who can, you know, take that on for you as they have the opportunity to read. And I'm also curious on this point, you know, you mentioned it, but I just want to double check. Is it the case that you really wait to give a manuscript to any one of these individuals? You wait until you actually have a quote unquote final product in hand. It's not like you write a few chapters and hand them off kind of thing, or what is that process like?
Yeah, I wait until I have a completed rough draft before I give it to anybody else. It's so it's not done in the sense that I know it has waves of editing and a different process it has to go through, but the story is completed. I don't have anything else that isn't written on it or what have you. So I give them a complete novel to give feedback on. And the other part of the feedback process is, and this is another one of those editing balances, is this one probably was harder for me than some of the other aspects, and that's to realize that you don't have to edit everything that somebody recommends that you edit. Sometimes somebody maybe just sees it differently than you do, and you don't want to change that part of it, and that's okay too. So that there's always, you know, it's such an interesting process, and I think sometimes people almost lean the other way, that, oh, if somebody doesn't like something, then it's bad and I have to fix it. Well, but what if another reader liked it, or what if another critiquer liked it, or what if just for you that's a really central part to what's happening and you don't want to touch it? You know, nobody's, it's still your story. It's still your baby, and you can do what you want with it.
And we'll take a break here before returning to this conversation with our guest in just a moment. Do you believe in the magic of storytelling? If you do, you're not alone. Salt and Sage is a creative community of devoted readers, writers, and editors who not only believe storytelling is magic, but that kindness is power and a rising tide can lift all boats. Whether you need a sensitivity read, a line edit, or deep developmental assistance, Salt and Sage can help. At Salt and Sage, they know receiving feedback of any kind can be scary, but their mission is to combine Sage's evergreen wisdom with Salt's ability to preserve and affirm the best of what feeds us, our stories. So act now and take the first step to bringing that wisdom and affirmation to your pages. Reach out to Salt and Sage today at saltandsagebooks.com, where you can learn more about their editing, consultation, and sensitivity reading services. And remember, story is magic, kindness is power, and a rising tide lifts all boats. Saltandsagebooks.com. That's saltandsagebooks.com. Yeah, and I think, too, it's really worth pointing out not only what you've said there, but also that if you are a writer who is working with some beta readers for the first time, or you've added some new folks to your pool of critique partners, that it's worth, even if you're not super into the feedback you're getting from them, and even if you opt not to use a bunch of it for reasons that could be any number of reasons, sometimes it's worth continuing to work with those folks, so long as they're not, you know, tearing into you personally. If they're giving critical feedback on your work, it might be worth sticking with them, even if you don't think you're going to use it, because over time, at least in my experience, I've discovered, okay, I know that beta reader A, for example, is going to give feedback that it falls in these particular lanes, whereas beta reader B is going to concentrate on other matters entirely. For a given story, I might be more interested in A versus B or B versus A, but there might come a time in the future where I'm like, oh, I'll be really curious to know what beta reader A has to say about this one. Even though I haven't used a lot of their feedback in the past, I think that knowing how they respond to this particular element of my story will be a really big cue into how it might be, you know, seen by a particular element of my readership. Is that something that you've kind of developed over time? Like, you can kind of start to anticipate how one particular critique partner might view something as opposed to another?
Oh yeah, definitely. And I just like you said, there are times when I know that there's another reader that works with my stuff sometimes, and she likes things that are very emotional. And so, like, when I gave her The Vampire's Protege, I knew, you're not gonna like this. I even warned her, you're not gonna love this one, because the main character, Karen, is very much not about emotion. and he would rather like rip his own heart out than deal with them. But her feedback was really valuable, because even though I knew a lot of it, I was going to go, yeah, that's not happening here, because she wanted to dive into these kind of more emotional parts. It was still helpful in terms of leveling things off and seeing where somebody that looks for that kind of thing in the writing might need a little bit more explanation. Or, you know, what she was doing was, if I go back to what I was telling you earlier, she was really humanizing him more for me. Because when she was seeing the emotion, I didn't necessarily betray who he was, but I let people glimpse a little bit more into him. So even though, you know, there was a ton of stuff where she wanted more, and I'm like, yeah, that's just not happening, because that's not what this is about. It was
right. Well, hey, and sometimes it's fair to just, you know, lay it out like that. And, you know, of course, we want to be very thankful for all of the work that these folks do for us for free to give us that feedback. But I think it is fair game to acknowledge with someone like, yeah, that's a really good point. This might be the vision that I have for it, though. We'll roll with that and see where it takes us, kind of thing. It's about, like we said, shaping meaning just a little bit differently and choosing how we actually want to incorporate the feedback that we get from these folks. And that kind of makes me think now about, say, we've done a lot of self-editing of our own, we've done some revising, we've thrown it out to our beta readers, our critique partners, we got all of their feedback back to us, we've integrated what worked for us, we've kind of set aside what maybe we weren't sure about. At what point in all of this do we actually know we are quote-unquote done self-editing? When do we know it's time to maybe start querying or send it off to an editor, for example?
That's always the million-dollar question, isn't it? Because there's a part of me as an author that feels like it never ends.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't.
On and on.
Yeah.
I did, but there's kind of a natural process after your beta readers have given you your feedback and you've worked with what they've done on it. I'll go through then one more time on my own, and if it feels good, then I think it's ready to go. And I don't know what to say other than to, it's just kind of an instinct that unless a beta reader or your own self-edit looks at a manuscript and you think this really needs X, Y, or Z, and I've got to dive back into it, maybe almost then redo some of the self-editing process, I think there just comes a natural time when you realize I'm just tweaking little things here and I'm not really doing much substantive work, and that to me means okay, I'm ready.
Yeah, I would agree that that feels like a pretty good indicator of knowing that the time has come for something to happen here, and that can mean submitting it, that can mean putting it out on the query road or working with an editor, whatever the direction is that we're ready to take it. I think it's interesting, too, you know, you mentioned it is the million-dollar question, and I'll throw this out as an example to listeners as well, because I have recently had a tough time with a manuscript I've been sitting on for almost a year now, and it's this one where I felt really good about it. I know that the story is there. I'm confident in it. I've had good feedback from betas, critique partners. I've integrated what worked for me. I actually ended up querying it briefly and sent it to a smaller press. The small press came back with an offer to publish it. They sent me this contract. I was really excited. I read the contract. I ended up turning down the contract because it wasn't quite the right fit. And now I'm looking at this story again going, okay, well, I know it's good enough to get published, but also, boy, I could really change a lot in this and make it even better, kind of thing. So sometimes we need more time, I guess, too. Sometimes it's not just necessarily about like, all right, for me anyway, I reached the point where I was just shuffling words around. What am I doing? You know, something had to happen. And I think what I've kind of learned over the course of the last year is that maybe I just needed time. You know, I needed that distance. I needed to have this weird like journey with this manuscript before I could come back to it now and say, all right, in another month or two, when my calendar's a little more free to take on revising this particular manuscript, well, I'm going to introduce some new elements. We're going to see where it takes us and see if I can't make a decent story, an even better story, before I hit the query road again. So every manuscript's going to have a unique journey to it, but I really do think that one of the best indicators, as you've very well said, is when you reach the point where you're just kind of shuffling things around and nothing very transcendent is happening, it's time to either take a break or you know that you're really ready to put it out on that query road.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing you mentioned, you can't get discouraged if for some reason you query a press or whatever you're doing with it and it gets negative feedback, That, of course, is discouraging. It's never fun to get that. But sometimes that's just another reason to go back and edit, that they've given you some positive ideas. They don't feel positive, but they're positive ideas about how to tweak your story and make it even better. And the next press could really like it because you've taken the time to reinvigorate it. So it's almost like that's a forced time away from the manuscript because somebody else has it. So you're not really working on it. And then it comes back. And so you just got to keep at it.
Yeah, I would agree. And another example of that from my own experience is with my sci-fi debut, Imminent Dawn. I mean, I mentioned it a little earlier in this conversation. It was, to get a little more specific, I guess, though, from the time that it started as a short story to the time it was published in January of 2019, 6 years had passed. And I can't tell you how many times over the course of that I was convinced I was done. You know, like, I had the story, I was ready to query, I hit that query road, I'd get a bunch of rejections, I'd get some nibbles here and there, I'd get a full request, I'm feeling really good about it, it doesn't quite work out. And you know what? I didn't let that at the end, it was discouraging. I'm not going to pretend, you know, I shouldn't say it didn't discourage me. There were times where it was kind of like, all right, I just need a break. But you can always come back to this stuff. You come back to it with fresh eyes. You spend a little bit more time with it. You start to incorporate some of that feedback that you're getting, even if it does feel a little negative just because you think you've crossed this particular threshold. But then you realize, you know what? It's fair to take that step back. It's fair to pull it off the query road and, you know, do a little repair in on the roadside, so to speak, before we hop back on the freeway. So again, it's about having a unique journey. Every manuscript's going to be different, and it's going to be different depending on the hands of the author that the manuscript is in. So a lot of really good stuff there. I'm glad you raised those points along the way here. You know, and one thing, one of the last questions I kind of want to run past you here is that self-editing, of course, it's daunting. You know, it's just like any other part in this writing process, querying, the actual drafting of it, even just outlining it. It can all be daunting stuff. But like, what final tips or advice do you have for writers who kind of need that encouragement right now? Maybe there's a listener who's like, oh man, I am kind of at the point where I'm shuffling words around, but I still don't think I'm ready. What encouragement can you offer listeners who are maybe in the throes of self-editing or who have reached that kind of decision point with their manuscript?
Yeah, you know, I think it's that the editing process, whether it's self-editing or with your other people that are looking at it, is it's really like it's full of criticism and opening yourself up to criticism. And what you have to do is remember that that's not all there is to the story, and to not let that become so overpowering that it's kind of weighing down on you. To remember that there's a good story in there, and to trust yourself and to believe in yourself and not get discouraged when maybe it doesn't happen right away or you have to send out a few different queries. So I think it's you can trust your readers because they'll tell you what they're thinking about it, but then you also just have to believe in yourself. That's maybe the hardest part of writing, whether it's the first draft and the editing stage after you've queried and been rejected, or even after you query and you're accepted. There's going to be editing with that process as well that can be just as painful, but to not lose faith, because I think that always kind of hovers over everything, this kind of darkness. But you got to keep believing in yourself, believing in your story, believing in your characters, and not give up. The editing process isn't really designed as torture. It can feel that way, but it's really just to make it better and better and better. And so you need to believe that it's getting better and believe in your original story and where you wanted it to go.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Just keep on keeping on and make sure you've got that belief in yourself. It'll all work out if you just are willing to take a deep breath and know that it's going to be okay once you've put in the work. So thank you very much, Damian Serbu, for joining me for this episode. I'd love to have you back another time in the future.
Thanks. Sounds good. I appreciate it.
And so concludes my conversation with Damian Serbu, author of The Vampire's Angel, The Vampire's Quest, and The Vampire's Protégé, among other titles. Thanks to Damian for joining me for this conversation, and thanks to you, dear listeners, for tuning in. Of course, the WritesCast Network wouldn't be where it is today were it not for the support of its advertisers and its patrons, so thanks especially to you for your support. RightsCast Network patrons pledge $1, $2, or $3 per episode in exchange for wonderful patron rewards, including RightsCast Network swag, discounts on my editing services, and additional votes in the upcoming RightsCast Awards. To learn more and become a patron yourself, you can visit patreon.com/rightscast. That's patreon.com/rightscast. Coming up next on the RightsCast Network is an episode featuring author and memoirist Dave Watson, who joins me to talk about writing a memoir. Stay tuned for Dave's episode, which will debut on May 3rd, 2019 on rightscast.net, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you tune in to your favorite audio programming. That's all for this episode of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast. Until we return on May 3rd, you can find us online at rightscast.net and as RightsCast on Twitter. Or if you'd like to contact me directly, I'm on Twitter as I am R.R. Campbell, and my author site is rrcampbellwrites.com. Until next time, this is R.R. Campbell signing off. Write on and write well. This is the RightsCast Network at rightscast.net.